Hey, this is Ross Paquette, founder and chairman of Meropost. If you want to learn how to successfully build your relationships, you should be listening to Build Your Network podcast with my good friend, Travis Chappell.
Welcome to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I chat with some of the world's top business influencers, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs in order to crack the code of networking. I believe that who you know is more important than what you know, and that your relationships ultimately determine the person that you become. So if you want to learn the new way of connecting, if you want to fill your network with quality people and skyrocket your results, then you're in the right place, because this is the Build Your Network podcast. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Build Your Network. Today, I'm sitting down with Ross Andrew Paquette. Ross is the chairman and CEO of Meropost, North America's fastest growing marketing automation and e-commerce provider, as well as Meropost Cares, his nonprofit arm, which focuses on corporate stewardship toward the protection, conservation, and education of global environmental issues. Guys, it's going to be an amazing conversation. Some of the best email marketers that I know are on Meropost, and Ross is the mastermind behind that software. So I'm excited to dig into a few things with him. But first, really quickly, if you are a six or seven figure entrepreneur and you know how beneficial a podcast would be for your business, you know how much credibility, authority it could drive for you, the relationships, the know, like, and trust that it can build with you and your ideal clients, but you just don't have the time or the team or resources to dedicate to figure out how to get it out into the world, then have me and my team build that for you. Head over to travischappell.com/make-my-podcast. There's a quick application there. We'll jump on a phone call to see if we'd be a good fit to build out a show for you. So you can focus on what you're good at, which is running your company, servicing your clients. And we can focus on what we're good at, which is building world-class podcasts. That's travischappell.com/make-my-podcast. Ross, what's up, man? Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. All the way from Spain too, and the island of Ibiza, no less. Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't have led with that.
Yeah. I was going to say that's good on you for taking time away from time in Ibiza to jump on a podcast interview. So, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I want to take things all the way back. This is how we always start out the show. Build a lot of context for those listening. Talk to me about 12, 13 year old Ross. What was life like for you? Like, I'm talking, you know, family life, parents, what were they up to? And, you know, school, did you like it? Did you not like it? Sports, all activities. What were you up to when you're, you know, 12, 13 years old?
Yeah, for sure. So I've got a bit of an interesting past. I've been adopted since the day I was born. I'm from a really, really small town in Northern Ontario. So in Canada, about 40,000 people, mining and forestry town, not a lot of technology coming out of there, not a lot of podcasts coming out of there, not frankly quite much coming out of there, sort of Shania Twain, if you're familiar with her.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. I played a lot of sports when I was a kid, actually. I skied for the Ontario ski team. I played soccer competitively for Ontario. I rode, actually came third in Canada on that front, which was really interesting in my later years.
Oh, wow.
Dad's a dentist, so he's still practicing, funny enough. Actually, I think now he's going to retire because of coronavirus. So a positive outcome on that front. Yeah, dentists unfortunately have like to wear the whole getup for every patient. So some benefits on that front, I guess you could say. Really kind of interesting upbringing, just a lot of, again, outdoor time. I, funny enough, didn't have a computer until I was 18 years old, which is kind of ironic given the tech company I run today. But yeah, really kind of interesting childhood and had such a great time. I look forward to someday having kids who can have something similar versus the iPads, iPhones, and everything we're dealing with today.
Yeah, no kidding. So you very big into sports, playing for the Ontario actual national teams. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Like Canada's national team for skiing, and then Ontario was soccer or football, Depending on where you're from.
Okay, so talk to me, like, top two or three lessons that you've taken away. Because, I mean, you're competing in sports at a very high level at that point, and not a lot of people get to those types of levels. Yeah. And so curious to hear maybe top couple lessons that you took away being so young at such a high level of competitiveness.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, hard work has always been a key component. I certainly think I gained that from my father. You know, as a dentist, he was working 10 to 12 hour days, not because he had to. I think he frankly just enjoyed it. I mean, that's always been ingrained in sort of my philosophy, whether that was athletic related or business related. It's been a core to the backbone of the company as well. You know, that definitely comes from a key aspect. I mean, I certainly also believe that, you know, having your own principles and while, you know, athletics doesn't always relate to that, certainly not at a young age, you know, sort of believing in yourself, believing in your team, depending on the sport that you're playing, I think always really came to mind is sticking to sort of the beliefs and principles you had. And that really allows you to excel or strive forward in a lot of these competitive landscapes, again, whether they be athletic or business centric. I carry a lot of those same, I wouldn't say the same philosophies I had when I was 13 by any means, but just sort of a, you know, a very similar view to what I had back then around the the focus and dedication that it really takes to, again, to both excel in the athletic community and on the business front.
Did you take any of this stuff into college after high school?
No, so I'm not much of a scholar, oddly enough. I realized in my first year in university, or maybe second year, it wasn't really for me. So I went to Ottawa, or University of Ottawa up in Canada. I never actually finished, though. I started working probably about halfway through. So I've got, you know, probably got about 2 years worth of courses over about a 5 year period. So kind of a great degree and the random assortment of psychology, philosophy, criminology, sort of picked and choose everything.
The candy shop college experience. Yeah,
exactly. So I really stopped though from an athletic perspective. It is much different, obviously, of course, when you head off to university. So nothing really after that. Frankly, I hadn't skied in about 4 years up until 6 months ago when I went on a SaaS CEO trip, ski trip.
Oh, no way. Nice. Yeah. That's funny, man. Yeah. Okay. So how do you end up in tech then? So you're obviously, you grew up in a small town doing a bunch of outdoor type stuff. You go to college and it's not really your thing. And it takes you 5 years to complete a couple years of courses. How does that beginning of the story end up where you are
for
now?
Sure. While I was in university, as I said, I started to work and I had a number of sort of random jobs. My core one, I was actually working for UPS in an administrative job. And one of the unique things about UPS or probably most shipping companies is the organizations are built on overtime, as in they don't really have anyone working. Obviously, I'm not driving a truck or loading packages, but it's really no different in terms of their philosophy. So they will let people work, you know, 12, 13, 15 hours a day, realistically. And so while I was working there, I was also working at a hotel in Ottawa, and I was working at a nightclub as well. So some days were, you know, 20 plus hour days from a work perspective. And so I did that actually probably for about 2.5 years consistently and 7 days a week, more or less, because I was working at the hotel and the bar on the weekend. And so fast forward kind of 2.5 years after, I was like, this is too much, like too many hours a day. I was going to just burn out from the sheer workload.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to leave all these positions and go travel for a while and really just kind of enjoy everything I'd spent the last 2 years not doing. So funny enough, a week after that, right after I had left all these roles, my parents actually called me and their godson had taken on a VP of sales job at a tech company in Ottawa. Ottawa at the time, I haven't actually looked into it recently, but was doing quite well. Of course, Shopify is out of Ottawa, just by way of example. So went to work there within 2 months or so. Very quickly went from, you know, kind of a cold calling junior sales rep to closing my own business. And then within about 12 months was the director of sales.
Oh, wow.
So really kind of a quick rise from that perspective. And so within probably another year and a half or two, I was like, you know, why don't I start up my own business, have 10 customers, you know, have a nice lifestyle business. I was living in Toronto at this point, which is a much larger city. And we just kept selling and developing the platform. And so I think that I'd say a good 12 or 14 months before I stopped fully working for other companies. And Maripost just really started to take off. So we went from about 300,000 in revenue to about 20 million in about 28 months.
Jesus.
So pretty quick rise.
Okay. So back to the sales part, man, because a lot of times when I chat with people, they kind of mention something and they just say it like it, you know, all laissez-faire. And I kind of want to kind of go back in and hammer in on this a little bit more. You said, I mean, to go from junior sales rep making cold calls within 12 months to be director of sales is a meteoric type of a rise within a culture like that, when this very competitive sales environment. What do you attribute your sales acumen to? Was it fairly natural? Did you have any reason why you felt that you were doing better? Did you work on it? Did you take in trainings? Like, was it their training? Yeah. What do you think it was?
A lot of it goes back to that original point. It was a lot of the work ethic side of things. So the same sort of skill set that I think I had at a young age that definitely was developed when I was allowed to work 20 hours a day, as an example, really just, you know, powered that forward. So when I was working at this company, don't think I was the best sales rep. Definitely don't think I was, you know, the top kind of from an admin perspective, but I would work 12 hours a day, right? Because that was somewhat of familiar to me. So when everybody, and, you know, Ottawa, Canada is somewhat maybe like a Washington, it's a very government city, 9 to 5. I would stay at the office until 8 o'clock, take all the East or Central Mountain and West Coast leads. Mm. And so everybody would come in the morning, there'd be nothing left. I'd be like, yeah, I closed all of them. And I would just sit on the phone and just, you know, constant dialing. Back then, I mean, of course, I was selling a, you know, kind of a $50, $100, $150 product, more like a MailChimp style product. But again, it was exciting. I was doing like 150 new, you know, kind of deals a month, which was an interesting way to grow.
But it was the same type of industry or same type of product? Okay.
Yeah. Coincidentally, that company is still around. It's owned by a much larger organization, but yeah.
That's one of the things, man, that a lot of people don't talk about with sales. My background, I come from a door-to-door sales background. So I did like 7 years of door-to-door sales and training and management recruiting and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that people don't talk about is that you can be successful in sales, even if you're not the most talented salesperson because of exactly what you just said. It's at some point, it's just a numbers game. And if you're dialing more than the next guy, then you can make just as much or more money as the next guy, even if that guy's closing rate is significantly higher than your closing rate, because you're just getting more people through the front door.
Just more volume. Yeah,
that's one of the cool things about sales to me that I feel like people don't really touch on a lot, is like, if you can just deal with the rejection and you can get in the workflow of talking to a bunch of people, then you can make good money just being a salesperson somewhere. Yeah. So you saw the potential, obviously, right? Like you kind of pierced the veil there. You saw past something during that year that initially made you be like, hey, you know what? What if I just did my own thing? Why do you think after seeing a good amount of success that you left that success to start something that was totally up in the air and maybe you're maybe not going to be successful?
Yeah. Being in the space and being so close to a lot of the customers and being quite in depth or adept on the product side of things really made me see sort of how the support side of things was. And there was just an extreme lack of support. So, you know, at the time, customers I was dealing with were spending, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month, much like they do today at Mariposte, but they weren't getting any semblance of a partnership or a relationship, or just frankly, again, the support that they should get for those types of dollars. And so when Mariposte was founded, the basis was that we were going to provide, you know, 24/7 support, even if it was Ross in the background pulling the levers and answering the chats and doing all this stuff on his own, which that was a long time where that happened. I think about 2 or 3 years of that. You know, it was built on that sort of philosophy of just a strong relationship and partnership. And as I said, the goal was only to have 10 clients in that early stage. So, you know, it's not that hard to, one, get 10 clients. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's not that hard. But, you know, when you start to build upon that philosophy that I mentioned, they're never going to leave. We still have our first client that we ever signed. We've obviously lost some clients, you know, over time, but we still have that very first client that came on board.
Yeah, right. So exciting. Yeah. So I'm curious.
10 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy to have that person still there as a member. I mean, that speaks to how much you delivered on that promise of making sure that everything was taken care of for them. So SaaS talk here, how long did it take to develop the first version of your product?
I'd say the first version was probably a year. And again, I was working still at another company and funding the development of Mariposte. And
so you're self-funding, you're basically making commissions, selling products, and then taking those commissions and building your own product.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually exactly what it was. And so I had originally started working with an individual that I'd worked with in the past, and things didn't work out well with him. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go back to work and let's just forget about Mariposte or whatever Mariposte was back then. And oddly enough, my parents actually came to me and said, hey, why don't you look online? Our product is built in Ruby on Rails, which is not, even today, it's not super common in terms of a coding language. So I went on to Odesk, which is now Upwork. And the first person I talked to is our current CTO, and he's been my partner in crime ever since.
Nice.
And he rebuilt the entire platform probably like 3 or 4 weeks. And then we had something that is still the backbone of what, you know, what we have today.
He rebuilt the entire platform in 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Not the platform we have today, obviously, but yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Very special.
Yeah. Wow. That is crazy. And that's the first contact you reached out on Upwork?
First person. Yeah. I don't think that happens ever.
Yeah. Stroke of luck right there, man. But that's so awesome to find somebody that's that valuable to the team like that. So at what point after jumping into Mariposte, because now, right, you have version one, you start getting some customers onto the platform. Now the thing that you've been dumping money into for the last year is actually starting to pay you a little bit of money, which has to feel amazing. But at what point were you like, oh shit, this is real. Like, we have something.
Yeah. I think it was 2013 or 2014. I'd have to go back and look, but we went from 300,000 in revenue to 3.3 million. And we only had, I think, 4 people in the company. It was me and then three developers in India. I forgot to mention that the gentleman I met, he was in India. So we actually didn't meet for 3 years, like in person. I never went to India until I think 3 years later. That would have been the year. And then, you know, after that year to the next, when we went from 3.3 to 13.3 and then to 20, you know, just in that process, in that initial process, it was like, this is clearly, you know, going to continue to scale and grow. And the customer base is obviously very strong. We were signing amazing customers, many again that we have today, Mercedes, Golden State Warriors, New York Post, New York Times. The list kind of goes on. So it's been a very strong, I guess you could say, process.
Yeah, I don't know how much you feel comfortable sharing on here, but can you talk to me about the sales process that you guys were using to be able to like get in touch with clients like that and actually convince them that your platform was worth switching to? I mean, switching from what you already have to another platform is a royal pain in the ass. Yeah. And anybody can attest to that who's done it. So you had to have had some sort of value proposition to be able to get clients like that who have huge lists of customers to be able to be like, all right, let's go ahead and try out this Meripost thing.
So a good percentage, or actually a massive percentage of our, I wouldn't say inbound, but of our leads or prospective customers, were all from referral or word of mouth. So we weren't doing any marketing or anything like that. We were just doing apparently a pretty good job, and people felt the need to, you know, divert their friends or colleagues or industry individuals over to Meripost. So that was a huge part of it. I think it was around 80% of all of our customers were coming in through word of mouth. But in terms of sales process, we've always taken the approach of more in the show and tell. And when I say show and tell, I mean more of the show side of things, as in we would approach it from the perspective of, you know, this is our product, like walk them through everything we have and sort of, you know, tell the story, but less like we never use PowerPoints. We still don't use that today. There's none of this like overall vision, like here's what you could have someday. It's like we were looking at it from, this is what we have. And if that's interesting or exciting to you, you know, let's move forward. And a good 60 or 70% of the deals we did close were closing after like 1, 2, maximum 3 calls. Obviously not the, you know, the large enterprise players, but people were still moving very quickly. I remember actually using Golden State as an example. They signed up with 2 weeks left on their contract with Salesforce, right? Wow. Which is a huge implementation. And we thankfully or somehow made it all happen. But that was really what people were buying into, was like what they were seeing in the actual product, and believing that myself or the team that was showing them were really standing behind, you know, what we were pitching, not just, you know, again, the show and tell approach of, hey, these are all the magical things you can do. And then the reality is vastly different after the fact.
You guys clearly solved a problem in the marketplace that some of these other giant companies weren't solving. Do you remember specifically attacking any sort of like weaknesses that some of those other companies had?
A lot of it was what I just mentioned, you know, the implementation times, the cost. I don't mean the cost of the platform, because Meripost is definitely not cheap. Actually, it's probably even more expensive in some cases than the larger ones. But where the issues come along is just the time to value. Right? People couldn't see at an Oracle or a Salesforce, who've all bought, you know, ESPs over the years for, in some cases, billions of dollars. They couldn't see the value quick enough, right? So it'd be like yourself, if you signed up for Meripost and you didn't see any value for 6 to 12 months, you'd probably be like, okay, we clearly need to, you know, rethink our strategy here, or what our process was. And I think that's been sort of the key to a lot of our success. People see the value very quickly, they sign up very quickly, and then we, you know, fulfill on that promise or on that vision.
Sure. So I'm curious to know now, are you like fully taking on the identity of like, I'm a SaaS founder at this point? Like, are you fully embraced in this world? Like, are you fully immersed in the tech world? Because I know at the beginning it doesn't seem like you are, because I feel like at the beginning you're talking about your kids growing up similar to the way that you did, which is something that I very much resonate with. So I was just curious on how you felt like looking at yourself from this perspective.
So I would say that the bulk of all the networking I've done in my entire career has happened in the last 12 to 18 months.
Really?
So I've been in SaaS for 12 years, give or take. And it's been 12 to 18 months. The first kind of, it's called SaaS events that I've gone to, the first kind of networking I've done into the SaaS space has all happened in that time. Which is kind of funny when you think about it. But I think we've taken the approach as well as a business, or I've certainly taken the approach of, you know, until you start running into roadblocks or failures, and everybody has failures without a doubt, or making mistakes, that I was just going to kind of follow the path that I was going on. So I've never been a big reader. I'm not proud of that by any means, but I've never been a big reader. I've never been a big networker. I've never, you know, spent too much time. I've really kind of stuck to the path that I was on until I hit such roadblocks that felt it necessary to, you know, to expand sort of that.
To seek out somebody.
It's interesting though, now as I've, you know, again, spoken to some of my colleagues in the SaaS space in a more business-centric way, or gone to some events, some of the things that I've learned in these cases, I'm like, wow, that really would have been helpful 7 years ago when I was, you know, arguing with a vendor over cost base or servers or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's funny though. And I guess it's kind of part of the journey at the same time.
I got to ask you this question then, Ross. This is the one I ask every guest that's come on the show. Do you believe that who you know or what you know is more important, and why do you believe that?
It's a great question. I would say I would center more on the what you know, in that it going back to the point I was just making, you know, in that I think people can get a lot further down the line than they believe. Right. We all tend to, you know, latch onto our friends, family, depending on the time and the situation, friends, family, colleagues, you know, partners, and so on and so forth. I tend to come from that background, but I'm, of course, a strong believer now in, you know, in the approach of who you know as it pertains to how that will help you sort of, you know, not just craft who you are, but I do believe that there's a fair amount to be said around, you know, the people that you spend time with. I can't remember the exact saying, but something like, you know, the five people you spend your time with really are who you are at the same time.
Yeah, you're the average of the five people,
Yeah, so I think there's a lot to be said for that at the same time, because I do believe that the faster, you know, again, had I spent the last 10 years, you know, spending more time in the SaaS community, I'd probably be a lot closer to some of my friends now, or colleagues, so to speak, or peers that would be very beneficial during that journey. But everybody's journey is different. And
sure.
I think that the one, you know, that the one I've gone down, I certainly don't have any regrets about it by any means.
Yeah, sure. That's why I love that question so much, man, because it leaves it open-ended and allows for people to come in and be like, well, for me, it was who, and for me, it was what, you know, if, and for me, it is who, but for you, it was what. And you're not even saying that it was a bad thing, that that's how you did it.
No.
You're just saying that, like, that's the path that I went down, and it happened to work out pretty well.
And, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So listen, man, I'd love to keep talking. We got just a few minutes here left, so I want to move on to the last segment here. Something I like to call the random round. Just a few quick random questions, quick random answers. Ready?
Sure.
What profession other than your own do you think that it would be fun to attempt?
Taxi driver or Uber driver.
That's a good answer. Sorry. That's a good answer. If you could sit on a park bench with someone, past or present, and chat for an hour, who would it be?
Charlie Munger.
How do you like to consume content? Books, audiobooks, blogs, podcasts, videos?
To be honest with you, as I mentioned, I'm not a big reader, so I don't consume a lot of content. The content I probably do consume isn't anything to brag about, being news sites and social media. I have picked up reading more, so I would say books would be the ideal.
Give us a glimpse of your morning routine.
My morning routine is actually quite funny. So I'm actually a late riser. I go to bed quite late. I tend to be most creative in the, you know, midnight till 2 a.m. type period. So I wake up at around 9. So my 9:30, I guess you could say. So my morning is not a routine. It's more of a crawl out of bed, make it to the computer, and just start the day all over again, much to my partner's dismay.
Yeah. Love it. What is your go-to pump-up song?
Oh, good question. I'm going to need to come back to that.
All right. Well, I
would default to like AC/DC if I'm thinking of pump-up. But
that's
also
not a bad default, though.
Yeah,
it's not a bad default.
Yeah. I can't say I've listened to it in probably 15 years, though. So I'm thinking about the time where I last had a pump-up song, and that's what it was.
There you go. What is something, besides business, setting business aside here, Ross, what is something that you're just not very good at?
So that it's hard to think of something I'm not very good at. I'm trying to think of what would be best. Yeah. I'm not a great listener, oddly enough. It's ironic. If you were to ask my girlfriend, she'd be like, not a great listener. But if you ask some of my customers, like, guy listens to everything we say. So I guess it's situational, selective.
Sure. Yeah, selective hearing. Yeah. As we finish up here, man, what is one place online where our listeners can go to connect with you the most?
I would say Instagram, funny enough, on a personal level. And then, yeah, Instagram on a personal level. I've slowed down on that front for business reasons. I used to kind of post everything I was doing every day, and now it's a little more selective, but I would say there, just at Ross Andrew. And then on the business side, obviously, just the Maripost front and what we're doing as a company.
Cool. So if you want to
Maripost.com.
Perfect. If you want to go check out some more things from Ross, head over to Instagram at Ross Andrew. If you're listening to this right now, make sure to screenshot this episode, upload it to your Instagram story, tag at Ross Andrew and tag at Travis Chapel, 2 P's, 2 L's. Let us know that you're listening to the show, and we'll reach out over there, say what's up over in the DMs where it all goes down. Ross, thanks so much for coming on the show today, my man. Really appreciate the time and had a blast chatting with you.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks so much.
Well, that's it for today's show. If you want more advanced networking strategies as well as an instant network upgrade, then consider partnering with my BYN Inner Circle Mastermind. There are already dozens of high-quality entrepreneurs in the group. There's dozens of video lessons on networking. There's monthly calls. There's accountability crews and more, all for the low investment of just $99 a month. So head over to byninnercircle.com to jump in. That's byninnercircle.com. Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We'll see you next time. Remember to leave every relationship better than you found it.